You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Back by popular demand. Now, we have a super dynamic speaker today on Wellness for Life Radio. He is the author of 14 books, including The 150th Healthiest Foods on Earth, Living Low Carb, and which is actually in fourth edition now. And he's also the co-author with cardiologist Steven Sinatra on the controversial bestseller, The Great Cholesterol Myth, which why lowering your cholesterol won't prevent heart disease, and the statin-free plan that will. Then, of course, the latest book right now, written with PBS star Stephen Massley, MD, is his book, Smart Fat, Eat More Fat, Lose More Weight, Get Healthy Now. Now let's welcome the nutrition myth buster and my good friend, Dr. Johnny Bowden.
Hey, how are you? What a great intro.
You're so cool. You know, love your work. Love you, Johnny. You know, what you've been up to? I think what we're going to talk about today is this kind of a fad that's been going on, a brewer's yeast. So let's chat about it a bit.
Brewer's yeast. Yeah, you know, that's so interesting to talk, because I was just doing some... we'll get into it. We'll get into it. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, you know, who was it I had on the show a little while ago? Patricia Bragg. I love her. Boy,
Patricia,
she's an amazing
Bragg,
woman.
She's still around. Wow, Patricia Bragg.
She's amazing.
Acid lady. Yes.
She's incredible. Now, Patricia was talking to me about brewer's yeast. You know, that Bragg's, they've got it too. And so let's talk a bit about it. What is brewer's yeast and why should we use it?
Well, it's funny, and it's funny that you mentioned that. Of course, the Braggs have been around for, I don't know, since the beginning of time, since I was a kid.
Right.
And that's sort of relevant because brewer's yeast is one of those supplements that when I was first coming up, I mean, I'm talking about when I was a professional musician. I wasn't even I wasn't even in this field, but I was always sort of interested in health, and I would always go to these stores that were then called health food stores. We don't even have those anymore because we have Whole Foods and we have an organic section at Ralph's and we have, you know, it's all over the place. But at the time, they had these little tiny, you know, stores called health foods, and it was kind of weird stuff that nobody knew. And, people who would shop there or eat that way were considered health nuts. Are you a health nut? Is that why you shop there? I mean, that was the atmosphere back then. You know, I'm dating myself, but that's what it was like when I was growing up and getting interested in this stuff. And brewer's yeast was very much of that time. So were a lot of the Bragg products, by the way, which is why I'm sure, you know, that she is so familiar with it. So it's one of those things that just about every bodybuilder used it, every fitness enthusiast used it. It was just a staple. And then, as these things sometimes do, often for no good reason, it kind of faded from view. And nobody heard about it anymore. And we didn't really talk that much about it. And recently, I was kind of just, you know, digging around and looking for subjects to write about and interesting research to find. And I started thinking, I wonder if some of these older supplements that were so popular, I mean, these, you know, this was like probably the number one selling supplement in the world at one point, if they were worth revisiting. And I started digging in a little bit on brewer's yeast, and I was very surprised by what I found. It's a really good supplement. It really deserves the kind of renaissance that it's experiencing. I know it's sort of back on the shelves now. Twin Lab makes a great one. We see it all the time. And, you know, I actually think that there is really something to it. There's a reason this was the most popular supplement for a long time. It really offers a lot of very, very good elements in nutrition, which we can go into, two of which are chromium and selenium. Now, everybody knows about chromium, everybody knows about selenium, but they didn't back then, and it was one of the richest sources of those two very important minerals, and it still is. So, you know, I think it's worth definitely worth a few minutes to talk about.
Let's do that, but you know what? I'm going to tell you that a lot of my patients and people are going to talk about, I don't want to eat yeast. It's
a fungi.
You know, so that's let's chat about that and clear that up.
Yeah, it's got the, you know, you and I were talking before we got on the air about cholesterol, and I'm sure we're going to get to that also. It kind of shares with cholesterol a certain kind of badge of dishonor. You know, it's like everybody, oh, God, it's got yeast in the title. It must be bad for you because none of us want candida. None of us want, you know, yeast infections. We want yeast overgrowth. All this talk about the microbiome and getting the bad bacteria out. Well, yeast is a bad bacteria. So it's got a PR problem, brewer's yeast. It's got to overcome that. So let me just be very clear. The yeast in brewer's yeast is deactivated. It's deactivated. It is not active yeast. It will not contribute to a yeast infection. It will not contribute to candida overgrowth. It has nothing to do with that. It is not activated. And that's a very, very important distinction. So why would we take it at all? Because, well, let's go back to what it's used for. It's called brewer's yeast. Well, what do we brew? We brew beer, right? Well, I don't and you don't, but I mean, that's what's brewed, right? And So yeast is used in the beer making process. And when it is used in that process, and I'm certainly not a beer maker and I don't know the details of this, but what happens is that it absorbs all of these minerals and vitamins and protein from the material that's used to make beer. It just sucks them up, and it concentrates them into the yeast. Now, once it's deactivated, so you no longer have to worry about the yeast component of it, well, what's left is still loaded with those minerals, those proteins, and those amino acids, and those vitamins. So you've got this. You've got none of the problems with the yeast, and all of the good parts of the stuff that it has soaked up when it was active. And that's why.
So when you say active, let me ask you this. So what you're saying is activated means when it's living, when it's alive.
Yes.
And when it's deactivated, you're saying it's basically yeast that's dead. It's there's nothing living.
Well, yes,
they can't multiply.
Listen, we eat grass-fed beef that's dead. We eat fish that's dead. We eat all kinds of things that are no longer alive, but nonetheless are loaded with the nutrients that they sucked up and absorbed when they were alive, right? I mean, just about every food that we eat, even plants. Once you pick an apple, it's on the way, it starts to die, right? It's no longer connected to its roots. It's no longer alive. So don't be, anyone listening to this, don't be fooled by the fact, well, it's dead, so what can it do? Everything we eat is pretty much dead, except for raw food, and of course that's good, but that's not all that we eat. So it
What I'm saying is that if it's dead, then it cannot multiply. It cannot grow.
That's exactly right. The part you don't want to be in your body is dead. But what it has absorbed when it was alive is still very much there and usable by you. It will not, however, multiply and cause yeast overgrowth or candida infections or any of that stuff. That's not going to happen.
Well, how about, you know, how do we take it? How do you take it?
I stick it in a smoothie, just a couple spoonfuls in a smoothie. You can mix it in anything. It's kind of tasteless, and sometimes it has a little bit of a nutty taste. It's not unpleasant in any way, but it really mixes quite well in shakes and smoothies, and I think that's a great way to do it. That's just another ingredient to throw into the shake. And it's a great source of B vitamins, except for B12. So be aware, there's a lot of marketing material about it as the source of B vitamins, which it is, but it does not contain B12. So you'll need to get that. But of course, we get B12 from many different other things, so we don't need it from that. But it is good to know that it's a very good source of B vitamins in addition to the selenium and the chromium.
Mm. You know, I'm doing a lot of genetic testing now in my practice.
You?
And I do for methylgenetics and other types of variants. And there's actually a variant called GIF for gastric intrinsic factor. And many people actually have either heterozygous or homozygous variants in it, showing that they actually cannot make B12 or convert B12 to be readily absorbed through the gut. So those individuals should be using sublingual B12.
You're preaching to the converted. Intrinsic factor, which, as you just pointed out, is necessary for the absorption of B12. We make less of it. Many people don't have it, as you just pointed out, or they have less of it as they get older. I have been taking B12 shots for, let's see now, 1998.
Wow.
So I'm a big believer in getting your B12 and getting it in a way that bypasses the digestive system just in case.
Right. Well, that's one of those foundational nutrients, you know, to optimize your health. And this is a great segue into that. Let's talk about what your beliefs are when it comes to foundational health.
Sure. Did you? You know, I wanted to tell you that let me at least use some of this research I dug up on Brewer's Yeast because I wrote an article on it. That's what I think is you know, that's what makes it top of mind for me. And I started, you know, digging a little bit into is there any actual research on this? Because as you and I know, we use, those of us in integrative medicine, naturopathic medicine, nutritional medicine, we often use things that work, that we've seen work, that we have good evidence of our senses works, but we don't necessarily have double-blind, randomized controlled studies on every one of these things or in the combinations we use them. And I don't think, for me, that's not a problem. But I'm always curious to see if there is any real research that, you know, would be considered high-quality, scientifically acceptable research. And I was very, I have to tell you, Suzanne, I was a little surprised to find that there really is quite a bit of research on brewer's yeast. I found, I'll just read you from my notes.
Sure.
There's a compound in brewer's yeast called ergosterol, E-G-O-S-T-E-R-O-L, and it's been found, there's a research study on PubMed showing that it's been found to inhibit the growth of human breast cancer cells. There's a research paper on PubMed suggests that brewer's yeast can increase levels of HDL, the so-called good cholesterol, and I know we're going to really get into that in a few minutes. There's research showing that it can reduce the common cold or flu in healthy people and reduce symptoms quicker. And it may, there's one research that actually shows that it may even decrease symptoms of PMS. So, you know, a lot of this is older research, but, you know, as our friend Gary Taubes has pointed out, some of the best research in the world on nutrition was done in the 30s and 40s and 50s, and we all forgot about it when we got so into pharmaceutical drugs and all the rest of the stuff that wasn't necessarily, you know, the predominant way of treating problems in the 30s and 40s. And this research is not that old. It's just buried there, and they're not doing much of it now on brewer's yeast, but it exists. And I was pleasantly surprised to find that if you go to PubMed and you put in brewer's yeast, you'll find a lot of really good double-blind studies that are very positive. So that's
That's great. Thank you. No, that's important to know that it's not just about vitamins and minerals. There's other ingredients in there that we weren't even aware of. You know, you use a powdered form. Are there any capsule form that, you know, if you don't want to put it in and sprinkle it, can you just pop it in as a capsule?
I do not know. I kind of like my Twin Lab one that is just, it comes in powder. I'm not even sure if they make a powdered one. And with a lot of these, you know, with a lot of, my personal opinion, there are a number of supplements and nutrients that really just are better in powdered form. Inositol is one of them. I just don't think glutamine is one of them. I just don't think you can get enough in a powder in a pill form. You know, people take glutamine all the time for sweet cravings, for sugar cravings, for blood sugar stabilization. They take inositol for sleep. I think you need big heaping tablespoons of that stuff, and it works really good. But when you put it in a capsule and you're taking, you know, 300 milligrams and you need about 30 capsules to get a decent dose, I'm just not a fan of capsules for certain compounds. And I think brewer's yeast I'd have to put it in that category. It's really better as a powder, as a flake.
Good point. Good point. Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that great info about brewer's yeast. And now we can just go ahead and segue into what I, you know, with you, I'm always interested in talking about all sorts of things, including cholesterol, because in my practice, I can't tell you, I do a lot of labs, blood labs and the lipid panels and getting all the details of the different types of LDL, right? The types of LDLs and all that. It's gotten a lot worse. And young people, Johnny, young teenagers are all having cholesterol issues. So what's going on?
Well, you know, this has been a many year struggle as far as I'm concerned. And sometimes I feel like I'm just shouting in the wind, you know, to just against overwhelming odds to try to get this message out. But I just don't think there is such a thing as cholesterol problems. There are problems with the risk for heart disease. And cholesterol is this minor player that has so little to do with it that it's almost, you know, I'll give you an example. I think you're familiar with my friend Mark Houston, right? You know who Mark Houston is. Don't you? All right, a great cardiologist. He goes around the country teaching doctors. He's won every, you know, the accolade you can imagine. He wrote the book, What Your Doctor Doesn't May Not Tell You About Hypertension. He's the head of the Hypertension Institute in Nashville. And he's just a very respected cardiologist. I always see him at the Scripps Conference and stuff like that. And Mark designed a genetic test, which you might want to know about, and I'll tell you about it offline, but it's called the CardiaX, and it tests 37 genetic markers for risk for heart disease. And you start to look at these things, and you start to see all the areas that can produce risk. Lipoprotein little a, fibrinogen, clotting factors, and it becomes increasingly apparent that this crazy focus on cholesterol, it is such a miss of the mark. It is so much taking our eye off the ball. And why do we do it? Because we've got a great drug that produces $30 billion a year in profits, and it can lower your cholesterol. But does it lower the risk of heart disease? And the answer is very clear to me. It does not. So we are wasting all this time focusing on high cholesterol when we've got about 30 other risk factors that are way more important and way more modifiable. Well, they're not. I shouldn't say that. The whole thing with cholesterol, it's very easy to bring cholesterol down. It's not so easy to reduce your risk for heart disease.
So what basically we're doing is we're barking up the wrong tree,
and
we really need to dig deeper.
We're barking up we're in the wrong forest. We're not even the wrong tree. We're in the wrong forest. And
right.
And that's why I people write to me about this all the time. I know that you have said, you know, cholesterol is a myth, the great cholesterol myth, your book and all of that. And my doctor says he's very concerned, minus 275, minus 240. And I ask these people all the time, did you do the test that actually matters, or did you do the stupid old-fashioned 1950s good and bad cholesterol one? And every single time they said, well, no, they only did the good cholesterol and the bad cholesterol, and my bad cholesterol is good. And I go, dude, would you go to a doctor who was using a medical textbook from 1903? We now know that there are at least five different kinds of HDL, five different kinds of LDL. And by the way, every time I say that to doctors, they say, oh, yeah, there's a lot more probably than that. So we already know that there's a half a dozen different subtypes of HDL and LDL, and they behave very differently. I'll give you one example, and probably the most important, LDL-A and LDL-B. That's just two of the subtypes. They are as different as black and white. LDL-A, look at it under a microscope, looks like a cotton ball, doesn't do much damage. It's very, you know, big, buoyant molecule. Look at LDL-B. That's a nasty little bugger. It's inflamed. It's oxidized. It does, in fact, cause problems. It's atherosclerotic. You cannot lump these together and say, oh, my LDL is high. Look, here's the example I always give. Conventional medicine, conventional doctors who are not trained in this stuff, who are not trained in nutrition, who are trained to use a prescription pad for every single symptom that anyone comes in with, conventional doctors will say, if your LDL is over 100, you're in trouble, we want to give you a statin. Here's what I, and if it was something like 130, 140, they'd go nuts. Here's what I say. If I had a 100 LDL, my conventional doctor would be happy. But if 90% of that was LDL-B, I'd be panicked. If, on the other hand, I had an LDL of 140, my conventional doctor would be screaming that I have to go on a statin drug or I'm going to be dead. But if 90% of that 140 LDL was LDL-A, I wouldn't bat an eyelash. You've got to know what type of LDL and what type of HDL you have, and you can only find that out with a particle test. They've been around for over a decade, and any doctor that's not using them, I'm sorry to say, I've earned the right at my age to say this, any doctor that's not using that is a friggin' idiot. And I've heard time and time again, friends of mine, people we know in our community, helpers, they come back and they go, well, I told my doctor about the particle test. He says it's not necessary. I said, change doctors. The guy's reading 1903 medicine.
That's right. So, I use the SpectraCell one. SpectraCell makes them. But there's various tests, and even LabCorp, which is, you know, across the country, anyone can do it.
Anyone can order it. And the only reason they say it's not necessary is because they don't know anything about it. They don't know how to use it. They don't know its importance. And so they say it's not useful.
You know, this is one of my own theories, but I mean, a theory, it's not a theory. It's been talked about, but I don't know if anyone really talks about it enough, is that I believe the reason why our cholesterol level is high, our LDL is higher to a lot of individuals, because the LDL is a particle that actually takes the cholesterol from the liver out to the bloodstream, where it's used for your brain and your skin cells and all the cell membranes and all that. But a very important factor that cholesterol is important for is vitamin D production in your skin.
Of course, it's a parent molecule for vitamin D. And here's something else, folks. It's the parent molecule for your sex hormones. That always gets my guy audience interested in it. Did you know that estrogen and testosterone and every other sex hormone that you care about comes from cholesterol? Do you know that vitamin D comes from cholesterol? What are two of the things that we are most deficient in? We got a friggin' testosterone deficiency in this country. Everybody's got ED, and we've got a vitamin D epidemic of deficiency in this country. Not surprising, because we're putting statins in the water supply, for God's sake.
That's right. I think that's part of the reason why we are having higher levels of LDL. You know, because of the fact that we're not utilizing the parent molecule to make the hormones, to make vitamin D. Vitamin D is a hormone as well now. So the key here is to go outside more, right? Go outside and make sure that you're taking the right nutrients and vitamins that can help you convert the cholesterol into the steroid hormones. All of that is all necessary. And again, and as you get healthier, And as you're doing and implementing these lifestyle changes, then the LDL will naturally go down.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I'm glad you brought up that notion of if you do these basic vitamins and eat the right foods and get outside. I have recently kind of tried to change my focus a little bit from the micro to the macro, and looking at the big picture, because I get asked a lot. I said, you're 70 years old. You're past 70, and you sound like this, and you look like this, and you're on the tennis court 2 hours a day, and you have a libido and a sex life, and you're active and involved, and you don't wake up with an alarm. And how do you do it? And I keep going back to, well, I don't really know how I do it, but I kind of have an idea that it really comes down to foundational health. And that's been my emphasis. That's where I'm kind of shifting my emphasis, foundational health. We get so caught up in the weeds of, you know, whether we should take coenzyme Q10 in the ubiquinol form or the ubiquinol form, and how many micrograms of vitamin K2 do we need? And here's the deal. Let's just simplify it for people. That's what I think people really want. I mean, yes, all of these details are very important when you're working on a case and it's a really puzzling situation. You've got 18,000 pathways that could be interfering with each other. But for most people, for the people who care enough to be listening to your show because they want to better their health, I want to simplify it. Foundational health, here's the deal. Get outside and get some sun. Get 8 hours of sleep a night. Drink a lot of water. Take the basic vitamins, fish oil, vitamin D, magnesium, probiotics. Take care of your gut. Remove inflammatory foods. And have a great life. I mean, it's really not that complicated. I'm kind of up to my eyeballs after doing this for 30 years with the details. And I really feel so many people would be so benefited by just slowing down and simplifying it and going, here's the deal. Eat real food, food that your grandmother would have recognized as food, your great-grandmother would have recognized as food that would spoil if you left it out in the backyard. Number two, reduce oxidation. And how do you do that? Eat foods with a lot of antioxidants. And how do you do that? Eat foods with a lot of color. It's really simple. Number three, don't eat factory-farmed meat. If you eat meat, which is perfectly fine to do, make sure it's grass-fed. So you decrease your toxin exposure. Get some outside time. Stop being so damn afraid of the sun. It's your best friend. You'll make 10,000 IUs of vitamin D if you spend an hour in the sun. We become so sun phobic, it's ridiculous. And and spend some time around greenery. There's studies from the University of Michigan showing that just exposure to greenery, if you're in a hospital room and you've got a view and it has a lawn outside, you have better metrics than if you don't get exposed to greenery. And these are kind of basic things. Pet your dog, make love, have some relaxation time, take a warm bath. These are health-producing behaviors that aren't complicated, don't cost anything. They all reduce stress, which is one of the four major promoters of disease. I mean, come on, guys. It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's the kind of message I want to spend the next decade getting out there.
I love everything you're saying. I'm right there with you, Johnny. Great, great information. Always love having you on Wellness for Life. You are such a delight to talk to and always great information. That's awesome. So I put a link. It's johnnyboden.com. That's his website for more information on him and his books. And maybe Foundational Health is going to be your next book, huh, Johnny?
I think it's gonna be my focus right now. That and I'll tell you something else. I think that men, I don't know how many male listeners you have, but I think men, older men in particular, are kind of underserved population in this demographic. We know that women buy 80% of the health books. We know that women make 90% of the health decisions in every family. And women kind of run the show much more than we give them credit for. And I think that there's quite a number of men 45 and up, 55, 65, 75, who really don't know what to do, and they don't necessarily want to fade out into the world, you know, and spend the last couple of decades of their life doing nothing. And I want to talk to them a little bit more. And I think they can really use this basic idea of foundational health.
That's great. You know, my husband's 70 today.
Oh,
Johnny, you know, George.
Happy birthday, George.
Yay. I know. Can you believe it? I mean, you guys are both such
brilliant.
Well, we're
kind of twins of the same. We're brothers of another, of the same mother. We're both from New York. We both have the same. I mean, yeah, I'm totally with you. George and I are very much cut from the same cloth, I think.
It's very much. I love both of you guys so much. And
thank you.
And you're doing great. Do everything that continue. Do what you're doing. We need
thank
more
you.
Of you. Thanks,
all
Johnny.
Right.
Okay, there.
Talk
until
to you
next
soon.
Time. Oh, absolutely. Thank you. So I put his link, johnnyboden.com, on my Wellness for Life radio show page. And this is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies for ultimate health and wellness right here on Radio MD. Until next time, stay well.